It was good to be back in the wilderness again, where everything seems at peace. I was alone, just me and the animals. It was a great feeling, free once more to plan and do as I pleased. Beyond was all around me. My dream was a dream no longer. I suppose I was here because this was something I had to do. Not just dream about it, but do it. I suppose, too, I was here to test myself. Not that I had never done it before, but this time it was to be a more thorough and lasting examination. What was I capable of that I didn't know yet? Could I truly enjoy my own company for an entire year? And was I equal to everything this wild land could throw at me? I had seen its moods in late spring, summer, and early fall, but what about the winter? Would I love the isolation then, with its bone-stabbing cold, its ghostly silence? At age 51, I intended to find out.
That is the voice of Dick Prenicky from his classic PBS documentary, Alone in the Wilderness. Dick moved to Twin Lakes, Alaska in 1968, and he built a tiny, impeccably crafted log cabin by hand. He lived there alone for the next 30 years. It was incredibly isolated, incredibly cold, and he became a kind of living legend. After his death, the National Park Service wanted to preserve the cabin, but nothing lasts long in the Alaskan wilderness. Enter Monroe Robinson, a master craftsman, famous in woodworking circles for everything from fine furniture to a much-admired hand-built log bridge. Monroe took on the task of repairing Dick Prenicky's cabin. And then he decided to go a step further, and over the course of 19 summers, he painstakingly reproduced every single thing in it, down to the patina on Dick's axe. Monroe wrote a book about the experience called The Handcrafted Life of Dick Prenicky. And Charles Monroe Kane, who has his own roots in Alaska, wanted to know more about the man who inspired such devotion.
In 1965, he got molten lead splashed in his eyes through an accident working on heavy equipment. And it left him blind for a while. And then it took years for the vision to come back in one eye. And as he was recuperating, he had a real epiphany that if he was ever able to see again, he wanted to live his life. He just decided then and there that that meant going out to Twin Lakes and building a little cabin for himself. And so he had a dream of doing that and then carried through with it. And it changed his life. And he was living his adventure, his image of the good life, of the fulfilled life. And he was 51 years old at that time. He took photographs, he took movie film, and he journaled every single day. And it started out as an adventure, and then he became one with the wilderness out there. He went out there as a hunter and a meat eater, and he killed a sheep that first, shot a sheep that first year for meat. And then after that first year, he never once again hunted game. He never even shot a ptarmigan or a grouse or a hare.
It's almost incredible to think about, but living up there like that and not hunting and not eating meat, it just seems phenomenal to me. And then I start thinking about you. So the whole time I'm reading about Dick, and I really enjoyed, by the way, your editing of Dick's journals. Wow. What a person. What an American hero. And as I was reading that, I started thinking like, well, who's this guy? Why are you there? Why did you go to the cabin?
I actually met Dick just in 1982, 14 years after he moved there. And then every year or twice a year, sometimes every other year, we would exchange letters, long, long, typical letter from Dick Prenicky. The bridge that I had built, I wrote a 5-page article for that that came out in Fine Woodworking magazine that talked about it. And I didn't really know until years later that Dick had written in his journals that that was the best piece of log work he had ever seen in his life.
And nice.
So John Branson became the historian for the park, and he knew of my log work. And when Dick was no longer able to stay at his cabin, he got too old, Then John Branson called and asked if I would come up and consult with the Park Service on what should happen to his cabin, the restorations and stuff. He thought that Dick Prinicky would want me to be the person doing that. Mm. So I came up there first just to do the first summer's work. And I ended up meeting my future wife there. We met and then were married 2 years later. But we returned to Twin Lakes all those 19 summers. Initially out of that reverence for Dick and the wilderness and wildlife. But as the years went on, we got to know people. Some of them said, visiting Dick's place, this isn't on my bucket list. This is my bucket list.
Right.
Or they came out there because they knew this was the last year of their life and they wanted to see Dick's cabin. Or they arrived and were so choked up with emotion that they couldn't talk for 20 minutes. Or they brought a loved one's ashes out to have them left close to Dick's place. People whose visits out there have so much emotion and it's so important in their life coming out there to be in their presence. And then to have those people say how much more that experience was because Kay and I were out there and knew Dick and had our own reverence for that place.
You know, it's funny you talk about the people. I was very touched by a bunch of stories. You could tell Dick, he's not an introvert. He's about people. He just happened to live alone in a cabin. But you talk about people, but there's also a lot of things up there. You live alone for 30 years in a cabin in Alaska. You need some stuff, shovels to door hinges. I mean, he built everything. You not only restored some of that stuff that had, you know, got affected by the environment, you made replications. How did that process work? How do you redo a handle for a shovel the same way Dick would have done it? Because there's lots of ways to do a handle of a shovel.
Well, first off, I went out there and I realized all of Dick's things are sitting in this cabin just as he left them. And I knew about his film. I hadn't seen any of his film, but I knew of it. And I knew of his journals, even though I hadn't read any of those. And I saw the emotion of people coming out there, and I thought, this is really just this world-class experience for people, and it needs to be preserved in a way that people can always touch Dick's life. I didn't have any trouble matching Dick's log work. My sense of craft, I'm this craftsman. Dick was a craftsman. But it wasn't the very most important thing in his life to do the very finest craftsmanship that he could do. So my work out there was to replicate Dick's work.
Right.
Right down to the swing of the axe and the push of the saw, and to leave Dick in every artifact that I touched. To be there with Dick as much as possible. There were so many evenings I would say to Kay that I got to know Dick a little better today. Dick is there still as much as I could have him be there.
My understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, a lot of his stuff, the tools and whatever you want to call them, there are gone. They're in a museum, right? And your replication is there.
Right.
Whoa, that's so interesting. Can I read something from the book that you wrote?
You may.
For some reason, I found it very powerful. You wrote, replicating the shovel's 9-inch metal branching fatigue crack to within 1/8 of an inch was both challenging and rewarding. Every hardware fastener exactly matches what Dick used, and every empty rivet hole is exactly placed. My goal was to leave none of me in the reproduction, but everything I could of Dick, including the patina on the shovel's handle.
Right.
Why?
I ultimately thought, I'm the right person to do this.
Nice.
Other people could have that skill, but I didn't trust that somebody else would have the spirit to keep Dick there. And so I'm like, it's up to me to do this. A few of Dick's really precious things were sent to the archives the very first year that I was there. And so the cabin didn't have those things. But as years went by, more and more of Dick's things, the little chair on the beach was starting to rot and it wasn't going to be there. The sled wasn't going to be there. So many things weren't going to be there because they were going to rot away. So rather than have them rot away, I did a minimal restoration for them so that they could be sent to the archives in Anchorage. But before they were sent out to the archives, then I made replications of each of those.
It's just so beautiful to me. And I want to go back to you for a second, because the romance of Dick, the romance of your work, and then in addition, you fall in love and get married. It's like you must find that cabin magic. It must be incredible to you in your life.
The very most important thing, Kay did not come out there to join her husband and fill my life. It was two of us. And when we got married, I'm going to read just a little bit from Kay's vows to me. And it is, "How was I so blessed to have found you? I have been searching all my life. What is it of your essence that I am drawn to? And to have found you at Twin Lakes, a most sacred and meaningful place for me. It is where our mutual love of wild spiritual places cross, where our similar interest of risk-taking and connecting with nature allowed us to meet and realize we loved being in each other's presence." Ugh. So that was Kay's start. Those are the first words of her vows. And I had a private vow that I made when we got married, and that was that I would go to Twin Lakes for as many years as Kay wanted to go to Twin Lakes. So I knew then that Twin Lakes was this very, very spiritual place for her. I lived my winters every winter for the next season. The airplane would bank into the drainage of Twin Lakes, and I would turn around and look at the smile on Kay's face and know that I would get to hear her spirit sing another summer at Twin Lakes. So it was both of us being up there that was it. It wasn't me or her. It was the two of us together.
You know, Kay uses a word in her vows, and it's the word sacred. And you talked about spirituality. I mean, I don't know how to ask this in a atheist way. I mean, I'm not even sure how to ask the question.
Right.
Is that hallowed ground? Has it achieved because of your efforts, because of his efforts, because of Kay's efforts, because of the people that visit? Has it become sacred ground?
Now, that's interesting you asked that. I mean, Twin Lakes is a sacred place without Dick Prinicky.
Right. Yeah.
But Twin Lakes, the connection that brought Kay and me to Twin Lakes and brought all these other visitors to Twin Lakes is Dick Prinicky. Mm-hmm. And it's this message that he has of living his dreams, living his life to the fullest. It may not be the image of living life to the fullest for a lot of individuals. Kay would end her tours out at Dick's woodshed, and she would say, "Which one of you would like to live alone in the wilderness for 31 years? Mm-hmm. And it was very rare that somebody would raise their hand and say, "Me, me, me." It did happen. But people would say something like that Dick's life rekindles dreams that they had of their own life. Some of them would say, "I'm really happy with my life. I'm really proud of my family, and I'm happy in my marriage. I wouldn't want to be out here alone. But I had dreams in my life that Dick's story rekindles for me and lets me revisit those dreams." And some people spoke of having dreams but never lived them. Mm-hmm. So they're attracted to Dick because Dick did live those dreams.
You know, we need stories like this in the modern age. We just do. And I appreciate your so many years of hard work. And I really appreciate you telling the story as well. So thank you very much.
Well, it was very much an honor to be a part of your interview, as it was a very big honor for Kay and I to spend those summers out at Twin Lakes.
Finally, back to the cabin building. I'm a better builder than I am a farmer anyway. 38 logs are in place, and I'm almost ready for the eave logs. I cut the openings for the big window, the two smaller ones, and the opening for the door.
That's Charles Monroe Kane speaking with Monroe Robinson, author of The Handcrafted Life of Dick Prenicke. Monroe Robinson spent 19 summers in Twin Lakes, Alaska, a place so remote you can only get there by float plane, where he painstakingly reproduced the cabin, tools, and other handcrafted artifacts of the conservationist Dick Prenicke. You can see pictures of Monroe working in Twin Lakes. We'll post them on our website at ttbook.org, along with a link to Dick's famous documentary called Alone in the Wilderness. It became a PBS classic after it first aired in 2004. Feeling inspired yet to make something yourself? Meet Hollywood's favorite carpenter, actor, writer, and comedian Nick Offerman.
Close to on the money there, just a little fine-tuning.
You have this wood shop in L.A. Do you have a favorite thing you like to make?
You know, it's really whatever's on the bench, whether it's a canoe or a cooking spoon. The magic of being able to turn a useless plank into an implement of use. Its value and its charisma has everything to do with its usability rather than how much gingerbread you can carve on.
You don't want to just look at it.
No.
Nick Offerman may be a comedian, but he takes woodworking very, very seriously.
Okay, so far it's working.
Stick around. I'm Ann Strainchamps. That's to the best of our knowledge. From Wisconsin Public Radio. NPRX.